This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian. Here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. It's the podcast designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of March 9th, 2026. After the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors forced recorder Justin Heap to testify in an open meeting, a Superior Court judge slapped down the supervisors' efforts to use that testimony in an ongoing legal dispute over control of the county's elections. Wayne Shutsky reports.
The supervisors used their legal authority to make Heap testify before the board last month to address conflicting statements the recorder and his staff have made about alleged election issues in the county. Judge Scott Blaney initially blocked the board from subpoenaing Heap's staff over concerns it would interfere with the ongoing legal fight between Heap and the board. He ultimately lifted that order, but now says those concerns were justified. Blaney says the board is not entitled to introduce evidence from testimony collected outside of the courtroom, and that he won't reward the supervisor's, quote, shenanigans. Wayne Shutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In Fronteras News. The Commerce Department is investigating whether Mexico's exports of fresh winter strawberries to the U.S. violates fair trade practices. From the Fronteras desk in Hermosillo, Nina Kravinsky has more.
The U.S. International Trade Commission determined there's a, quote, reasonable indication that unfairly priced winter strawberries from Mexico are hurting U.S. farmers. That comes after a complaint filed late last year by the Florida-based Strawberry Growers for Fair Trade. The investigation could be the first step toward tariffs on winter strawberries from Mexico. Last year, a similar complaint from Florida growers led to new double-digit tariff on tomatoes grown in Mexico. Arizona imported about $2.8 billion of agricultural products from Mexico last year, according to the University of Arizona. Much of that was fresh produce. Nina Kravinsky, KJZZ News, Hermosillo.
In Tribal Natural Resources. The Senate Indian Affairs Committee heard testimony in support of a water settlement for tribes in northern Arizona. As Alex Hager reports, tribal leaders say the settlement would help bring clean water to their communities.
Tribes, including the Navajo Nation, Hopi Tribe, and San Juan Southern Paiute, have largely been excluded from more than a century of talks about managing water in Arizona and the West. This settlement would solidify the tribe's access to water and unlock $5 billion for new water delivery projects. Senator Mark Kelly supports the measure.
This settlement is a major step forward, securing the tribe's water future while providing long-needed certainty for Arizona and the entire Colorado River Basin.
The federal government raised some concerns about finding the money to pay for the settlement. Some states in the Colorado River's upper basin are worried that it could bring too much water from upstream states to their downstream counterparts. Alex Hager, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening.
Rio Salado College is hosting the Dash with Rio 5K and 10K Run Walk in Tempe on Saturday, April 18th. This community event welcomes runners and walkers of all levels with early bird registration for a limited time. Details at dashwithrio.com.
In politics news, here are Mark Brody and Wayne Shutsky.
As candidates across Arizona campaign for this summer's primaries and the fall's midterm elections, the Trump administration is continuing to look back to the 2020 election. Senate President Warren Peterson earlier this week confirmed that he'd complied with the subpoena and turned over documents to a federal grand jury related to the widely debunked audit conducted of the 2020 election in Maricopa County. Yesterday, Attorney General Chris Mays and Secretary of State Adrian Fontes sent a letter to county recorders around Arizona encouraging them not to turn over voter data to the federal government if they are subpoenaed. With me now to explain what's going on is Wayne Shutsky from KJZZ's Politics Desk. Wayne, good morning.
Good morning.
So who is looking into this now? Because it seems like there's more than one potential investigation going on here.
Yeah, as far as we know, there are two separate investigations at this point. There's the one you mentioned by the FBI. That's the documents from the 2020 audit that Senator Peterson turned over. And then there's a separate investigation, it looks like, by DHS, HSI.
Homeland Security.
Homeland Security, yeah. They've requested some information from Attorney General Chris Mays' office that they gave them. They said most of it was public records anyway, and that had to do with a lot of reports and things like that that former Attorney General Mark Brnovich had put together when he was in office during 2020 and in the aftermath of that election.
So what is it that Senate President Peterson turned over to the FBI?
We don't know the specifics because they won't tell us. I have records request pending. But documents related to the 2020 audit. So, you know, it's 6 years ago now. But to take us back a little bit, that was when in the aftermath of the 2020 election, a lot of voter fraud claims flying around, especially from President Trump and his allies. The Arizona Senate decided to subpoena a bunch of records from Maricopa County and conduct its own audit with the cyber ninjas. We get to say that again. And, you know, this is a group that had no sort of past history doing audits, but they did it anyway. It was full of issues and problems. It ultimately still found that Joe Biden had won that election.
By more than what the official tally
had found. But again, also like a lot of election professionals, audit professionals said that, you know, you can't really trust anything that came out of that because the methodology was just so flawed. So anyway, it's documents related to that. I believe President Peterson eventually told VoteBeat that ballot images were a part of that tranche, but beyond that, we don't really know.
And it's probably worth noting that Senate President Peterson was sort of co-overseeing that audit with then Senate President Karen Fann.
That's right. Yeah, he was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I believe, which was over, which, yes, was in charge of that. So every photo kind of the hearings on this is President Fann with President Peterson right next to him.
And can you talk a little more about the documents as far as what we know of what the AG's office turned over?
Yeah. So again, these are reports basically. Former Attorney General Mark Brnovich, the late Mark Brnovich, was looking into all these different voter fraud claims that came in at the time. He was obviously also seeking a seat in the U.S. Senate, so a bit sympathetic to the president's claims. And these documents, you know, so it's really just him basically in his office basically chasing down all these different theories. And so the Attorney General turned over, Mays turned over what they found or didn't find in those cases. And then additionally, some, I believe, some analysis from the Mays's office as well, showing that, you know, basically nothing came of a lot of these claims, including state lawmakers who were making claims in public about voter fraud, Senator Wendy Rogers, Senator Mark Fincham, being invited by the then Attorney General's office to show them what they knew. You're saying there's voter fraud, show us what you know. I believe Senator Fincham showed up and then said he did not have any proof to back up the claims. And then Senator Rogers refused to come and meet with them.
Has the Attorney General or the Secretary of State been asked or subpoenaed for anything else that they haven't given them?
Not as far as we know. Again, we don't I don't believe the Attorney General's office was never subpoenaed. That was all voluntary, again, because they said it was mostly public record that they were asking for anyway, stuff that's been previously released. So they were just giving it to them. And, you know, notably, county elections officers as well in Maricopa County said they have not received any subpoenas for any of this stuff. So it looks, at least at this point, like all these requests are isolated to kind of rehashing claims about 2020 and the investigations that we're looking into them.
Is there a difference between what the FBI and what the Homeland Security investigations are trying to find?
Again, the FBI declined to comment. We're not hearing a lot coming out about what they're actually looking at. But based on the records they're looking at and the kind of what each entity is tasked with, we can kind of make some assumptions. You know, DHS is looking typically it does deals more with immigration people in the country. Without authorization. So you can think they're probably looking for evidence of the president's claims that people who are not citizens are voting. And then FBI may be looking at broader claims that, you know, conspiracy theories that we saw pop up during the audit, everything from bamboo ballots to you know, blank or fake or ballots being injected into the system, all these things that there's been no evidence to show. But again, that the president and people close to him have continued to push.
Are folks making a comparison between what's happening here and what we saw in the Atlanta area in Fulton County, Georgia, not that long ago?
Yes. Yeah. I actually spoke with the the States United Democracy Center yesterday, where they're a pro-election group. They do have ties to Governor Hobbs, A.G. Mays, Fontes. They've helped them with certain legal issues, but they're a pro-democracy group who've fought back against claims of, you know, widespread voter fraud without any evidence. And they're basically tying it all together. They're saying basically it looks like the Trump administration is going after all the states, swing states that he lost that delivered the election to Joe Biden in 2020. So Georgia was one of them. Arizona's one of them. They say they're expecting to see similar efforts in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania.
All right. So I'm going to ask you, which I am reluctant to do, but I will anyway, to move into the world slightly of speculation here. Do we have a sense of why this is all happening, or do folks who are involved in this have a sense of or speculation as to why this is all happening right now?
Yeah, like I said, I haven't gotten any response from the administration asking why they're looking into these records. But again, these democracy advocates, some Democrats, they've basically speculated that they're trying to sow doubt ahead of the 2026 elections. Obviously, we've all heard that 2026 is not expected to be a good year for Republicans, mm-hmm. you know, so there's the possibility that Republicans could lose the House and that would hurt the president. And in that case, they're speculating that the president wants to sow doubt in the results of these elections so that then when they come in, they can challenge them.
Interesting. All right. Lots more to keep our eyes on. KJZZ's Wayne Shutsky from the Politics Desk. Wayne, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
In business news, state authorities are recommending the owner of a Tempe bar raided twice last year should lose his liquor license and face prosecution on criminal charges. Matthew Casey reports.
Police arrested a total of 422 people last year at Tempe Tavern in underage drinking raids. Now, an investigation by the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control accuses owner Robert Tasso of habitually disregarding the law, making false statements to police, and more. The report calls minors central to Tempe Tavern's business model and concludes the establishment is a threat to public welfare. Tasso is suing the city of Tempe, alleging selective enforcement. His lawyer says they will vigorously fight license revocation. Matthew Casey, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In science news, it's been more than a year since the U.S. first blocked cattle imports from Mexico to protect against the New World screwworm. Now the U.S. and Mexico are both working on projects to try to stop the parasite's northward spread. Nina Kravinsky has more.
USDA has picked a contractor to build the new sterile fly facility in Texas, close to the easternmost part of the U.S.-Mexico border. Experts say facilities like that are the best bet at containing the parasite. The deadly New World screwworm breached the Mexico-Guatemala border in late 2024, prompting the U.S. to close its border with Mexico to cattle. Sterile fly facilities release flies into the environment that don't produce offspring to whittle down the population of their flesh-eating larvae. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum says a facility in southern Mexico is expected to reopen in 2 months. The new Texas facility is set to be fully operational by November of next year. Nina Kravinsky, KJZZ News, Hermosillo.
And finally, from KJZZ's original production, The Show, co-host Sam Dingman speaks to an Arizona pastor on his controversial views on masculinity and faith.
Since President Trump's re-election prompted a nationwide debate about gender, questions about how to define it and who gets to have resurfaced. There's been a particular focus on young men and their relationship to Christianity. Some surveys have shown Gen Z men seeking out churches in record numbers. And while the data on that is somewhat mixed, one thing is clear. A group of vocal Christian influencers is trying to capitalize on the perceived trend. One of them is based right here in Arizona. Dale Partridge is the pastor of Kingsway Bible Church in Prescott, and he also runs a series of seminars on masculinity at his website, manhood.org. Before he became a pastor, Partridge was an entrepreneur. He started a fitness company and a rock climbing gym, as well as an online sales business called Sevenly, which contributed a portion of each of its sales to charity. But these days, Partridge spends his days preaching at Kingsway, running his masculinity classes, and posting on X, where he proclaims himself a, quote, preacher of hard truths for American Christians. Many of his views blend Christian faith with extreme right-wing positions on culture and politics. As part of our ongoing series of conversations, attempting to understand the voices shaping the debate about masculinity, I spoke to Partridge recently, and I began by asking him if he thinks, as many on the right do, that manhood is in crisis.
There's a bit of an egalitarian aura in the world right now where everything wants to be the same. Everything wants to be flattened. We can all do the same thing and we're all the same thing. And men don't need to feel like misogynists because they're taking leadership of their household or, you know, a headship of their home or caring and leading society. I always tell people I'm just a normal guy from like 1880 in the sense of my views.
Well,
if
before,
you look at,
can I ask you about that? Because so far, the way that you have been talking about this is not necessarily religious or scriptural. those ideals that you're ascribing to gender, where do those come from for you? Are those religiously rooted?
Yeah. I mean, I think that no matter what, they're going to be rooted in some sort of worldview, right? So it's not whether we will be religious, it's which religion will we be. It might not be a religion like Christianity or Islam or Hinduism. It might be a religion of self. It might be a religion of secularism. It might be a religion of, you know, nationalism, whatever it may be. And so I think historically, Christianity has proven itself to produce the greatest nations, civilizations.
So let me just make sure I understand. You're saying that everyone on some level in your framing is religious. It's just a question of which faith you're choosing. And if I'm hearing you right, you're saying that it is the Christian faith that is superior in that hierarchy.
Yeah, I think the results are in.
So, you know, in reading up about you prior to the work that you're doing now, you were in the entrepreneurship space. I mean, I know you're still an entrepreneur, but it seems to me like when you were running the organization Sevenly, which was a company that you co-founded, if I'm not mistaken, that gave away, was it $7 of every purchase?
Product sold, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. In reading up about you then in your various bios and things, it didn't seem to me that faith and spirituality were as much at the center of your identity.
Yeah, correct. I was young in my faith. I had been in the business space for some time. It landed me writing a book called People Over Profit. And that really was shifting me towards this view of really what matters. There's a culture war. I think it's ramping up. It has been ramping up, I think, since 2016. I think when Obergefell passed and homosexual marriage, and that started to change a lot of the societal infrastructure around sexual ethics.
But can I ask, Dale, was that something that offended you personally? Like, why was this issue so relevant for you?
Well, a few things. One, we want things to be according to what is right and wrong. And so when the scriptures speak about order or modesty or masculinity or femininity or marriage or any of these things are good, not because God's not the beneficiary of these things. We are.
But do you see that as contiguous with, I mean, because in your book, People Over Profit, one of the things that book is aiming to do, as you wrote at the time, is to map out a, quote, responsible and compassionate marketplace. And how do you square the idea of compassion with some of these things that you've just been saying, which imply that other faiths are lesser somehow?
Yeah, because think about it this way. You know, Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. The second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. A great way to love your neighbor is to make sure that your neighbor can't be naked outside. You know, I lived in Oregon, and I remember being at a coffee shop with my family and watching a whole bunch of people ride by on their bicycles completely naked in front of all my children. And I think that we're entering into a bit of a national crisis. I think the Charlie Kirk event was somewhat of a crossing of the Rubicon moment.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'd like to come back to that. But let me get first to one of the ways that it seems you are engaging with this is you have this curriculum that you have built at manhood.org, where the description you have on the website is a 1-year program for men to build wealth, love their families, and leave a godly legacy. So tell me a little bit about the wealth piece of that. Why is wealth building the first thing in that list?
Yeah. So, you know, I have a lot of men in my world, and I've noticed that a lot of them are struggling financially. Obviously, it's a hard economic time.
Right. And I mean, I agree with you about that, Dale, but I have to say, I mean, a full year of tuition for your program is $2,200.
Yeah. Well, so this is mostly for guys that already have a small business or already have, you know, a good job and are trying to figure out how to go from, you know, 60 grand or 70 grand or 80 grand to, you know, 250,000 or to get up to a place, because this is a problem. Money's a tool, right? It could be used for evil. It could be used for good. And I would rather money in the hands of Christians than in the hands of people who hate God. Christians need to earn more so that they can give more, so that they can support the ministry of the church.
I know that the wealth building component of this is only one piece of it, because some of the other core tenets here are holy ambition, health for high performers. And to be clear, you see those things as core to masculinity specifically.
Yes, I would say that they are core to masculinity.
Because, I could also imagine women caring about all of those things.
Yeah, they can, certainly. Women are going to care about all those things, but in different ways, right? And so, you know, men are designed naturally to lead. They're designed to build, to protect, to be these providers. And so women are incredible administrators. They're incredible helpers. They're incredible nurturers. They have not felt free to be feminine. Feminism, in my opinion, this might sound harsh, it's generally women wanting not to just be treated like men, but to really act like men.
But what do you what do you say to a woman who would hear you say that and assert the idea that it is not for a man to dictate what is in their nature to want or desire?
Well, I'd say that no one's forcing anybody to do anything.
But you are, just to be clear, Dale, I mean, you are asserting that this is the superior worldview to which everyone else must submit.
Correct. But so is everybody else. So it's like it's politicized or be politicized.
But do you think feminism seeks to have the worldview you believe in submit to it? Because the implicate
100%.
The good implication of egalitarianism is live and let live, right? You can believe these things that you believe, and feminists and whoever else can believe what they believe, and there's room at the table for everybody.
But that's the myth, and we're realizing now that it's not sustainable.
But how do you see us realizing that? Help me understand where you see that.
Yeah, so let me give you an example. So 3% of the population basically influenced and made the entire population culturally submit to them. You know, we had the rainbow flag flown at the FBI headquarters.
You're saying you feel like queer people forced the rest of society to submit to them?
They're certainly on their way until I think there was a big pushback, and I think we've actually shifted the cultural tone.
But do you think they were asking others to submit to them, or they were just asking for equal rights and protection under the law?
Everybody is an evangelist, and you evangelize your worldview. And those worldviews, once they're evangelized, become politicized. And those politicized worldviews become morals. And those moral worldviews become religious. And those religious worldviews come and confront the way that I live and different things that are happening to my towns and the naked people that are just flying down the street.
But Dale, what happens? I mean, by your logic, this very small percentage of the population is a threat to your way of life. So even if you buy that logic, why is the answer for that for you to be a threat to their way of life?
Because my way is right.
According to?
The scriptures. You have to understand that the way that a Christian thinks is a Christian goes, well, the church is the body of Christ. And the gospel is the means by which Jesus is conquering his enemies.
I have to say, it feels like we're a long way from compassion here.
I don't believe that you can persuade someone into the kingdom of heaven. I think that Jesus says, it's Paul who says, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of Christ. And so I think you preach the gospel that you need to submit to the Lord Jesus Christ. And the work of the church is a compassionate work because it's bringing order and beauty back to people's lives.
As Dale and I were speaking and his views on manhood came into focus, I found myself reminded of many of the late Charlie Kirk's views on the subject. Like Kirk, Partridge views masculinity as ordained by an almighty God to be dominant and superior. But if that's true, I asked him, why is it also so easily threatened?
Yeah, I think it was G.K. Chesterton who said something like, tolerance is a virtue of those men who do not have any conviction. I think it was Winston Churchill who said of the armies of World War II, he said something like, we don't fight because we hate those in front of us, but because we love those behind us. The idea of being tolerant of evil is not good, righteous, loving, or compassionate.
But this is
we're
this
using
is where
the tools.
This is where I get a little concerned, Dale, because, you know, to go back to Charlie Kirk, I mean, we're obviously in a time of extreme political violence. And I guess what concerns me about some of the ways that you're talking about this in terms of the idea that this is a battle and that, you know, you're fighting for the people behind you and the people in front of you are enemies and evil. I mean, there is a way in which that really foments a culture of confrontation that can lead to that kind of violence. So, I mean, do you think there is something about what you're calling for in manhood that needs to explicitly say that is not masculine, that violence should be off the table?
Well, physical violence certainly should be off the table unless it's forced upon you. The Bible certainly speaks that we are in a battle, that we need to wear the armor of God. And there's a spiritual war that is constantly happening around us. That spiritual war manifests in a variety of ways in politics and culture. And so the Bible does certainly support a spiritual war. I do think that there's been a war going on for a long time. There's just been one side fighting, and that's been the left. And so I think that the right is finally waking up and going, oh, there's a war, and we actually need to get engaged now. Now, again, this war is an ideological war at the most part. It's a cold war, right? It's not a hot war. Hot war is when there's been some gunfire.
Yeah, there certainly has.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but the way that the only way that this could really escalate, right, in terms of getting into, more shootings, assassinations, all that kind of stuff, I think that's just going to be, this is, Sam, the result of multiculturalism.
Is it the result of multiculturalism, or is it the result of Christianity calling multiculturalism evil?
Liberalism calls Christianity evil.
Does it?
Right. But again, oh, yeah. I mean, go to my Twitter feed and just look at the comments. I mean, I'm getting thousands of threats a month. And so, it's an all out ideological warfare right now. And there's different places of the battle. Right. So you want to get to the heart of it, where there's a lot of heat and a lot of conflict. You get down when you're talking about issues like Charlie Kirk was. There's a lot of risk there. And I think the Lord calls a variety of people into different spaces in that war. But you got to figure out, Sam, what side is right? And based off of what? By your emotions? By your intuition? By your own intellect? Like, what standard says that what you're doing is right?
And so, but again, Dale, is where we get back to the problem, right? Is that people who are not believing Christians would look at what you just said as that is you basing it on your own instincts, your own emotions, your own opinions, because there is no proof that Christianity is the gospel, just as there is no proof that Islam is the gospel or any other faith that we could name.
Well, there is proof and there is fruit. I think, again, when I said earlier is that when you have a beautiful, when you have a civilization, I mean, you're still riding the coattails of a Christian civilization right now. And again, what we see is that, like, for example, with Islam, they're very intentional about taking over the political, cultural reality.
But again, Dale, you're talking about being intentional about Christianity taking over the political and cultural reality.
I know. I don't know why you're not understanding this, is that we both are. That's the war. That's the battle. And the conversation, I think, is very important. And I think there's not going to be much room for the middle anymore.
Well, I think we can certainly agree that, in your words, the conversation is important. So thank you for talking to me about this, Dale. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And I appreciated the questions, even though they're pushing against it. I think it's a good conversation to have.
I've been speaking with Dale Partridge, who is pastor at Kingsway Reformed Church in Prescott. Dale, thanks again.
Thank you.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by the Katina Foundation and Basis Charter Schools, Palo Verde Generating Station, SRP, and the Virginia G. Piper Charitable Trust. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more, online, and on the KJZZ mobile app.